This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Ben Stanton, in for Ben Kiefer. Well, today in Des Moines, the Iowa-based group Trees Forever has their Spreading the Canopy Symposium, How Trees and Green Space Improve Our Health. And the keynote speaker of the event is my guest. Kathleen Wolf is a research social scientist with the College of the Environment at the University of Washington in Seattle. She's collaborated with the U.S. Forest Service, and she has worked professionally as a landscape architect and as an environmental planner. Kathleen Wolf, thanks for being on River to River today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to join you today.
Of course. Well, I saw that your professional mission is to discover, understand, and communicate human behavior and benefits as people experience nature in cities and towns. So can we start with just broadly speaking, how do people experience nature in cities and towns now?
Well, what we're finding is that the United States, as well as the entire world, is becoming more urbanized. So while our nation was largely small farms and people kind of scattered about the landscape, our nation's population is now over 80% urban. And so people are, they're in more dense settlements. Our lives are, in a way, more compact, where we go to work, where we go to school, where we do our errands. And so it's become important to think about how nature, contact with nature, and the availability of nature in the city, that's become more important. And why is that? I've been working on a project, and we've looked at over 40 years of research, and we've found a remarkable base of evidence, a foundation of evidence that shows that not only are parks and gardens and green spaces and street trees important or desired because of aesthetics, because of their beauty, but there are also some really interesting responses. So people... studies have revealed faster healing in hospitals if people have a view of nature from their windows. Their stress response, our physiological stress indicators such as heart rate and blood pressure, are reduced if we encounter natural scenes versus highly built gray scenes, if you will.
And so, to interrupt you, this can all happen, you're saying, with not just necessarily walking around in nature, but just with a view.
Yes. So a variety of encounters, a view out one's window or from one's car, studies have looked at that, as well as visiting a park, and you don't have to be highly active within that park, sitting on the bench and taking stock of what's around you and enjoying the natural elements around you can be of benefit. Because of this evidence, some hospitals are even introducing simulations of nature, so digital panels that have views of nature that people can enjoy while undergoing procedures or in the healing process after surgery or some such. So there are a variety of ways of encountering the benefits of nature or experiencing the benefits of nature.
And some of the challenges then for urban planners and for those in cities is to incorporate that into a city. Can you talk about some of the challenges? How can that play out?
Well, again, historically, what Americans have thought of nature, you know, important nature and meaningful nature as being those big parks outside the city. Our national park system, our national forest system, very much cherished in our country. And in fact, these are models for other countries about large reserves or preserves of natural systems. And so, consequently, in our cities, many times the parks were just sort of accidental, you know, a little plot there and a little bit here, and, oh, someone donated some property there, we'll make it into a park. So the biggest challenge now for city planners is to think about green infrastructure, think about parks and open spaces as a land use system that's equal in importance to, say, residential land uses or transportation land uses. So to really look at the big picture, the connectivity, the degree of access of every single person in the city to some bit of nature very close to their home or workplace or school, that's the challenge now, to think of this as a system rather than as scattered parcels throughout the city.
Again, my guest is Kathleen Wolfe. She's a research social scientist at the University of Washington, also the keynote speaker at an event today in Des Moines, the symposium Spreading the Canopy, How Trees and Green Space Improve Our Health. Kathleen, we're talking about how urban planners might be able to look at things differently, but what about cities and towns that are well established already? And, you know, making a change to add green space, that's a different challenge.
That is a different challenge, but there are many opportunities. So when possible, to acquire land for parks or other ways of locking in green space, that's very important, but that's not the only opportunity. There's a movement underway in many cities across the United States, and I think this is happening in Des Moines as well, called green infrastructure, and that is trees help us to improve air quality. They can be used. Tree plantings can be helped, as well as other landscapes can help with stormwater management, reducing the amount of water then from precipitation that goes into our pipes and drains. Those systems, if you will, those green infrastructure systems can also be co-designed to be kind of micro parks or mini parks in and around our homes and other buildings. So what we need to think about is, rather than parks are there and they serve one function, and here's our streets and they serve another function, can we help nature multitask? Can nature provide environmental benefit, but at the same time provide social and psychological benefit by way of design? And that's where my background in landscape architecture comes in, is to help people envision this co-design effort for mutual benefits or for multiple benefits.
Well, and talk more about that. How is that effort going, and what are the challenges to you now?
Well, what's really encouraging is that there are many cities that are adopting these systems. And so all across the country, and I imagine in your city as well, in Des Moines, that there is this wealth of small experiments. So there's a commitment to the idea. Then there's, following that, there is the feasibility. How can we do this both from an engineering standpoint as well as from a budget standpoint? And so cities are trying different efforts. They're trying different things, fine-tuning, and then once they lock in a bit, they get it settled down, then it goes more broadly through the zoning and or engineering codes for a city. So we're seeing some really encouraging things with this sort of systems approach in a number of cities around the country.
And Kathleen Wolfe, you hinted at it, but another way to look at this is that you mentioned that money needs to be spent. Even if you're changing, say, a parking lot into a park, that doesn't happen for free. And, cities, if they have to put money into that, have to make that decision. So
yes.
Is the challenge there?
Oh, big challenge. And, of course, what we see is the challenge is the hard costs of acquiring property or converting a property, as you just mentioned, a parking lot. Those are hard costs, and they're easy to estimate. They're fairly easy to estimate. These nature benefits, the environmental, psychological, social, this big bundle of benefits are sort of they're quite intangible, and
but
difficult to estimate.
But is there an economical benefit too?
Well, that's the thing, is economists have a variety of ways of getting at these intangible benefits, and so we are getting closer to doing these broader benefit-cost ratio studies. And because nature improves health, nature helps us to be more healthful in a variety of ways, we're now seeing a balance of cost to return to communities in that stormwater management, for instance. It costs less to install trees and green spaces maybe than it does to install ever larger pipes and drain systems. For human health, it may be cheaper to put in green spaces that make a community more walkable, and then that way people's body weight go down and chronic diseases are reduced, and so there are public health cost reductions. So that's the sort of balance that we're starting to see pencil out in many places.
Again, my guest, Kathleen Wolfe from the University of Washington. She's a research social scientist there. She's also the keynote speaker at an event in Des Moines today. Trees Forever has their Spreading the Canopy Symposium, How Trees and Green Space Improve Our Health. Well, you are the keynote speaker today. What is your message? What do you hope to impart?
Well, I've been told in preparation for my talk that Iowa is striving to be the healthiest state in the United States. And that's an ambitious goal, and it's a very laudable goal. And I think that green systems within the communities, within the cities, towns, and even villages of the state, a commitment to implementing green space for the sake of health is a very important strategy and a very important system to integrate. And so in my keynote, I'll be talking about the specific evidence that we know from very good research that's been done across many disciplines that these things are important, creating parks, creating walkable communities, and encouraging people to recognize the benefit that they gain from encounters with nature and being with nature. That's part of the package for becoming the healthiest state in the country.
Well, talk more about the specific evidence that you're referring to. Let's get some real-world examples. I mean, I know you must have seen a lot of cities in your travels and your research. What works and why does it work?
Well, so first of all, the walkability and body weight, which has consequences for public health, chronic diseases. There are enough studies that suggest that having good parks with certain features that people want to go to, certain attractions and amenities, that indeed people will go out and walk more frequently. And there are some communities that are actually doing what they call parks prescription. The medical community is on board, and if someone goes in and they're a little overweight, they might be told, well, you know, we need to work on your diet, and maybe we'll prescribe some meds eventually. But first of all, I would like you to go to this park and walk so much time per day, per week, and then we'll see what happens with your weight, see if that comes down. So that's one example. Let's see. Another example is healing in hospitals. A number of studies indicating that having access to green, visual access to green, reduces the amount of time of healing for many types of illnesses, or some illnesses and some surgeries in our hospitals.
And hospitals have implemented that and seen the evidence.
Yes, and so some of the more progressive hospitals are now actively incorporating healing gardens within their facilities, either retrofitting or with new hospital design, they're putting these in.
Again, my guest is Kathleen Wolfe. She's a research social scientist at the University of Washington. And she's also the keynote speaker today in Des Moines at the Trees Forever Spreading the Canopy Symposium, How Trees and Green Space Improve Our Health. Well, can we talk about the balance between urban space and green space? You've hinted at it a little, but is there a formula? Is there a ratio that planners can use to see that they have an appropriate amount? Every city is a different size, and so how much green space is appropriate?
That's a really good question, and that's a question that's starting to be debated as a consequence of this foundation of science evidence that we have. So there are some rules of thumb. For instance, distances, access recommendation of every citizen in a community should have a park, a green space within a quarter mile, walkable distance. Some argue that that should be even a shorter distance, but that's what it is, where it's at now. Other recommendations have to do with tree canopy, so the environmental benefits that trees provide as well as the experiential benefits. General recommendation is about 40% canopy for residential areas where people's homes are.
So you're saying 40% of the square footage or square mileage of a city should be under a canopy?
Yeah, if you would, you know, imagine looking at your city from an aerial view. You're up in an airplane, and as you look at sort of that flat plain, that 40% of that land area have tree cover on it, have green blobs scattered across it. So that's a general recommendation that some cities are pursuing. What we're seeing in this health research, and it relates to your question, is we now know a good bit about the benefits, but we don't know yet about dosage. So we don't know how much, how often, and also we don't know if there's variability. We have some hints at this, but we don't know for certain what is the variability across our lifespans. So does a child need more contact with nature, does, say, an elder? Or in our adult lives, mid-adult lives, might our needs for nature in kind as well as in time be different from other times in our lives? So that's the sort of questions that are now coming along in all of this research.
Men and women experiencing it differently?
Gender differences as well. We're seeing some slight differences in some of the studies. For instance, one study was done in public housing in Chicago. And with households having views of nature, boys did not, but girls showed greater sort of sense of discipline, greater attention to the skills, well, studying in school, for instance, the things that they need to do to better their lives. So some of the research does show some gender differences.
Again, we're talking with Kathleen Wolf, a research social scientist with the University of Washington, who is in Des Moines today for a Trees Forever symposium about green space and urban environments. And Kathleen Wolf, can the development of green space, can it be done wrong? Even though a planner's plans might be well-intentioned, is it possible to do it in such a way that wind up doing harm in some way?
Well, doing wrong and doing harm, maybe a little different questions. Doing wrong is one can dedicate. What happens in so many communities is the first step of creating a park system or even a single parcel is acquisition. But often there are public funds for acquisition, but not necessarily for development or maintenance of that parcel. So what you see in many of the studies is that there are a variety of spaces within a park, imagining a larger park. We have sort of a sense of comfort with more enclosed spaces rather than big expanses that are really kind of boring, if you will. So positive design, good design that enhances the opportunity for these benefits, that's one thing that can happen, and we're learning more about that. How do you optimize this space for the greatest number of people by use of design? Doing harm, we don't yet know that, though there's a suggestion that not having enough green space in our cities that people can access or in our communities does indeed do harm. That not because of our long background and our dependence on nature as a human race, that we need. Some people argue that we actually need. It's not nice to have or an optional benefit, but we need to have contact with nature. So perhaps there's harm in not providing adequate amounts of green space and trees and gardens in our cities.
Well, Kathleen Wolf, you were talking earlier about being able to look down from, say, an airplane and look down on a city and see how much canopy there is. And I think you said 40% roughly would be a good number if we were to sort of pick a number. And maybe now with satellite imagery and Google Maps and things, it might be relatively easy to look down and kind of get a basic perspective of what your city looks like with green spaces and trees. I know there's some software, though, that the USDA Forest Service has developed, and I hope you could talk a little bit about iTree.
Yes, iTree is a great tool to help understand. It's oriented primarily to urban forestry, so the trees in our communities, cities, towns. And what it does, then, is it's a free tool, and people are able to use it, communities are able to use it. What it does is it provides a protocol or a way of estimating one's tree canopy, and then it goes another step. It estimates, once one gets a handle on how many trees and the cover of those trees over the landscape, it then provides an estimate of the environmental benefits. So air quality, stormwater management, energy savings, those types of things. And in some instances, those benefits are even translated to economic terms. So how much money do you save by planting a tree here, a tree there, or achieving a canopy goal?
And what you might save, what, heating and cool, or air conditioning and those kinds
exactly.
of things?
Exactly. Okay. So by a number of studies have shown that if you plant trees in a strategic way in and around buildings, by particularly shading air conditioners and shading the south and west sides of a building, you reduce the amount of heat gain from the sun, particularly during the summer. And in that way, there are demonstrable energy savings on your monthly bill. And so that becomes important to a lot of people.
Is this iTree software, it's being used broadly now? How common is it?
It's growing by leaps. Its use is growing by leaps and bounds. So there are communities all over the country, from the largest cities of our nation to some of the smaller communities that are using this tool, and it's gone international. There are a number of cities in other countries as well.
So cities are purchasing them, and they have someone on city staff that's putting data into.
Or contractors can be hired to do this work. So Davie Resource Group is a primary contractor. They have a lot of experience with the tool and can assist the community in implementing it if they don't have the expertise on board.
Well, just quickly before we go, Kathleen Wolf, how do you like to use green spaces? You live in Seattle, so how do you interact with nature and your urban environment?
Oh, well, first of all, I have kind of a hodgepodge garden, and I just love to go out and be in the dirt and observe the plants over the different times of the year, what they do, how they grow, the different colors and textures and whatnot. Also, I'm a bike commuter, and so all through the year, rain, shine, sun, snow, I'm on my bike.
And in Seattle, through a lot of rain, I guess.
Through a lot of rain. I have very good rain gear. But through this bike commuting, there are sort of touch points along my routes, if you will, where there's certain trees or certain gardens or certain yards or certain parks. And I just enjoy these encounters during every day as I'm making my way back and forth to work.
Kathleen Wolf, thank you for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Kathleen Wolf is a research social scientist with the University of Washington in Seattle, and she's the keynote speaker at an event today, a symposium from Trees Forever today in Des Moines. Well, stay with us. Next, we're going to be looking at Father's Day, and we'll evaluate what one website calls the Father's Day Index. Find out what that is. We'll also talk about the growing trend that has more men as the stay-at-home parent as more women are the family breadwinners. Iowa Public Radio News is next. We'll be back in a few minutes on River to River.